Thank you everybody for listening to EU Radio here at the European Parliament in Strasbourg. I'm with Thomas Weitz. Hello.
Hi.
Thank you for having accepted our invitation. Thomas Weitz, you are a European deputy from Austria, member of the Green political group here at the European Parliament, and also in this frame you are also a member of the Committee on Foreign Affairs and in also other several delegations with countries on the Balkans region.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Our topic for today, a debate organized here at the European Parliament this week about the own initiative report regarding the process toward a future enlargement of the European Union.
Yes.
You are the shadow rapporteur for your group on this text. Thomas Weitz, starting with a simple question about a difficult path, can you remind us how can a country become an official member of the European Parliament? What's the main steps in this process?
Well, first of all, you have to apply for membership, and secondly, you need to fulfill some basic criteria, the so-called Copenhagen criteria, or at least be able to portray that you're on the way on fulfilling them, and then there's a political decision whether you get a candidate status or not, and it takes several years usually to get a candidate status. So you first have to show that you're ready to do the needed reforms. In some cases, candidate status comes very fast and the reforms only come afterwards.
Last year, we've talked a lot about some new candidate status that have been delivered, for example, to Ukraine. But there are also 9 countries today that are currently presenting this official status of candidate to a European integration. What does its status mean? What can it give to such countries?
Well, the status is needed to start accession talks. The status also allows you to get funds from the European Union, the so-called IPA III funds, so pre-accession funds. And basically, it's a starting point of actual negotiations. And that means going chapter by chapter, supporting the country in fulfilling the European acquis, so our legislative framework.
So while we wait to see how these different processes develop during this plenary session at the European Parliament, a debate was organized entitled Deepening EU Integration in View of Future Enlargement. What should be the main message given by the European Parliament on this topic, on this enlargement issue?
Well, there's two angles. One angle towards all the reforms that we need to do on the European Union level. If we want to enlarge further, we need to overcome unanimity decisions in some aspects. As you can see in the last years, the Union is struggling to speak with one voice when it comes to foreign policy. Also, more cooperation in terms of security policy is needed in the future. But also, if we talk about taxation issues, we need a coherent European approach, and for this we need to overcome unanimity, especially if we enlarge for more countries. It can't be that, as we see now, a single country like Orbán's Hungary that is outside of the legal framework and the main values of the European Union can basically take the whole Union hostage when it comes to very important decisions, like sending financial resources to Ukraine, as an example. So there is a clear call to start treaty changes and treaty reforms, so we're still capable to act also on a global level with more member states than today.
On this point, on the unanimity rule, what's at stake here? Is it the protection of the European market functioning, of our European way of life, or the risk to have merely a union that can no longer function correctly?
Yeah, it is about our European way of life that we need to defend and to be able to defend. But mainly in regard of accession of new countries, it's mainly about common foreign and security policy. So when it comes to the candidate countries, we're calling also the Commission and the Member States to be very strict on full alignment with our foreign and security policy, and also with fully meeting the required conditionalities. And with conditionalities, I mean the countries being active in good neighborly relations and also reconciliation where needed, and to show that they really mean it when they are on the path towards European Union. And that's, there's some concern on some of the already current candidate countries, like as an example Serbia, where we're actually not sure whether the country really wants to join the European Union. There's no alignment with the current common security and foreign policy, and there's a lot of difficult contacts to Chinese authorities, Russian authorities, and so on. So there also we're calling for clarification, and also the Commission to clearly say, let's stop the accession talks with this or that country if they do not comply with the needed conditionalities.
How can we prevent such risk without killing the hopes of other candidate countries?
No, we need to reward the candidate countries that do the reforms, also with ambitious programs to support them in economical terms, in social terms, in terms of environmental legislation, or in crisis situations like the health crisis we had around COVID. So to really reward these countries and to also fulfill our promises when it comes to the next steps to be taken in the process. On the other hand, we also need to be very clear and outspoken when it comes to countries that do not comply. And what can we do there? I mean, clearly we have to stop funding these countries. We have to stop spending European taxpayers' money on these countries if they do not clearly show their will towards a European path.
On this particular topic, you mentioned the case of Serbia, which is sometimes criticized as being opportunist in order to receive the European money without making the necessary reforms in order to prove its validity to access to the European Union. My question here is, regarding the enlargement strategy of the EU, is sometimes the need for better the enemy of good or not?
There is a component that is a geostrategical one, and it makes sense to offer countries a pathway into the European Union, also not to leave these countries to foreign influence of China or Russia or Saudi Arabia, and to keep them as allies in the European process.
Because Western Balkans countries have been candidates for a long time, for many years, into the EU integration process. And I recall the president of the European Commission, Jean-Claude Juncker, promised to have Serbia and Montenegro inside the EU for 2025. Mm. So it's tomorrow, actually.
Yeah, for Serbia, this is absolutely impossible because the country is backtracking. There's no progress to be seen in the last years, rather the opposite. For Montenegro, unfortunately, it was their own governments that have messed it up. They would have had the chance, and they still have the chance, if they do the remaining reforms and if they get their majorities together and the common interest of the country, and it's a country that still has a support, a pro-European support of more than 75% of the population, supports the European path, so they need to deliver the last reforms and the last, especially reforms in the juridical system and justice system. If they do that, they can become member within 2 or 3 years. And for a country like Montenegro, we also don't need a treaty change because that country is not very big, and so it would be easy to digest that country into the current structures. So we don't need treaty changes for that new member state, and they would have all the chances still. So it's not, in the case of Montenegro, so much the fault of European Union, but really the fault of the political actors in the country.
Do people know that? Do the partners of the European Union are aware of this complexity in the reality, or is the fact that despite the promises of the EU, all these countries are still not yet members of the EU? Is it not a threat on the credibility of the Union?
Yes, it is a threat on the credibility, maybe not of the Union, but of the process of joining the European Union. But at the end of the day, we need to also make sure that the Copenhagen criteria, so the main criteria on freedom of speech, on human rights, on citizens' rights, on an independent justice system, on electoral laws that guarantee fair and free elections, that these main and basic conditionalities have to be met beyond all the, let's say, political will and political welcoming of the countries. These main criteria need to be met, otherwise we're undermining our basic fundament of the European Union.
About the reforms you asked to do, sometimes through change of the treaties on the functioning of the EU, concretely, what changes would that be? That the end of the unanimity rule? You mentioned the case of Hungary, who often put his veto through this rule, using this rule of unanimity and non-unanimity, with the result of paralyzing the EU, for example, on the aid to Ukraine. We can assume a country such as Hungary would be in opposition for the end of such rule, because it gives it such a big advantage in the functioning of the EU. Can we hope for such reform to realize, or is it utopic?
But concretely on Hungary, there's a strong push for an Article 7 procedure against Hungary. That would mean that Hungary loses their voting rights, and they also lose the possibility to veto. And this is concretely a strategy how to get the needed treaty changes. But we're talking about something that is still quite in the future. So let's see if Hungary and the citizens of Hungary that are more and more uncomfortable with their government do not elect another government in the next elections. So because when it comes to Ukraine as an example, that's where we really need treaty changes. If we want to enlarge further, we need to overcome unanimity decisions in some aspects. We need changes in the common agriculture policy. We need changes in the cohesion policy, because Ukraine is a rather big country that will also have a lot of seats in the European Parliament here, so we need a certain reform of the allocation of seats, and we also need a reform when it comes to the principle of one commissioner per country, because I don't see that it makes sense to just multiply the commission's portfolios. At a certain point it becomes ridiculous, so we also need a commission that is able to lead and to take decisions and to be able to cope with the political realities and developments. So also there are some reforms needed, but they are mainly needed for the big future countries, not so much for the small ones on the Western Balkans. But again, if we look at all the Western Balkan countries, all six of them, well, again, we need reforms to accommodate them.
Thomas Weitz, in all this situation, what role can the European Parliament play?
The European Parliament is a key stakeholder when it comes to the accession process. We are part of the negotiations. We are part of the networking in the countries. We are public voices in the countries. We are having the connections and the regular exchanges with the parliamentarians from that country. So we are part of the reform process. And so we are having a say also on the budgetary means. The decisions on IPA III funds and allocation of funds are taken here in the European Parliament. The status also allows you to get funds from the European Union, the so-called IPA III funds, so pre-accession funds. Basically, it's a starting point of actual negotiations, also with ambitious programs to support them in economical terms, in social terms, in terms of environmental legislation, or in crisis situations like the health crisis we had around COVID. So to really reward these countries and to also fulfill our promises when it comes to the next steps to be taken in the process. Also a certain controlling, but that has to be extended because we have to make sure that European taxpayers' money is also used in a proper and legally sound way. And this is something where we need good controlling. Court of Auditors is great, but they are only coming years afterwards. It takes several years usually to get a candidate status, so you first have to show that you're ready to do the needed reforms. And in the yearly, let's say, controlling of where the budget is used, the Parliament needs to be more engaged and have more say.
And maybe one final question, if you agree, Thomas Weitz. In less than 100 days now, the European election will take place. Is the idea of future enlargement of the European Union in the mind of the electors or in the mind of the debate of this election or not?
The European elections are unfortunately still very much national related elections. So if you see the debates, also a lot of the topics that are debated are actually national topics and not European topics. But still, there has been a change after the illegal invasion of Putin's army into Ukraine. There has been a change in mindset that majority of citizens understands today, that we cannot just hide away from that reality, and that if we want to have a secure and functional European Union, we need to finalize the accession process when it comes to the Balkan states. I mean, this is not just somewhere on the outskirts of the European Union, but in the center of the European Union, there's this kind of white spot that is, it's our backyard or in the yard, if you want. So when it comes to the candidate countries, we're calling also the Commission and the Member States to be very strict on full alignment with fully meeting the required conditionalities. And with conditionalities, I mean the countries being active in good neighborly relations, and also reconciliation where needed, and to show that they really mean it when they are on the path towards European Union. And there's some concern on some of the already current candidate countries, like as an example Serbia, where we're actually not sure whether the country really wants to join the European Union. There's no alignment with the current common security and foreign policy, and there's a lot of difficult contacts to Chinese authorities, Russian authorities, and so on. So there also we're calling for clarification, and also the Commission to clearly say, let's stop the accession talks with this or that country if they do not comply with the needed conditionalities. But also when it comes to enlargement, meanwhile, there has been a change in mindset. So there we really concluded, and there's a lot of citizens supporting that meanwhile. But also when it comes to enlargement towards Ukraine, citizens understand that Ukrainians bravely defend the European way of life. They defend democracy, freedom of speech, freedom of media, and civil liberties. And if we want to defend our European Union, we need to support Ukraine as much as possible. And there, the perspective of becoming a member of the European Union one day is also what keeps Ukraine motivated. And so it's extremely important, and a lot of citizens support that our day.
Are you yourself running for the elections?
Yes, I'm running, and I will most likely come back.
And is the enlargement topic put in relief in your program or in your communication?
Yes, absolutely. It's a key point in our green program, but also me personally. You mentioned already, I work in the foreign policy committee, mainly on the Balkan region and the eastern neighborhood, which is the countries that have also applied and got a candidate status, like Moldova and Ukraine, but also Georgia. So this is where I put a lot of my work and a lot of my political capital. So and this I will go on doing that.
I thank you very much, Thomas Weitz, for your participation to this interview on EU Radio, and thank you all for your attention.
You're welcome.